I really would love to see you, Allison. Just do Mike's Super Short Show for me, please. Please! Please! Well, my child in me really wants it.
You are Mike, so you have to say, and now you know, because it's... And then we'll all say, Mike's Super Short Show with Mike's the okay sign super. And a point.
And now you know, because it's
Mike's Super Short Show.
No one has asked me to do that.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tea Time.
Woohoo!
Hey. First of all, I just want to say that if you don't know what we're about to talk about today, that's okay. Because...
I don't.
It's my Super Short Show. Listen... We have Allison Stoner in the building.
I'm so mad that that's the intro, but I appreciate it.
Let me tell you something, Allison Stoner. Okay? Oh. I've known you for a while, but throughout all of that So Raven, when people would ask me, am I good, I'd say, Mike's Super Short Show, every time.
And now you know, because it's Mike's Super Short Show.
Every single
time. Why did you
time.
Wait 20 years to tell me this?
Because I felt like we needed it for this moment.
That's
she
true.
She was saving it. She knew that there was a podcast in the future.
I also loved you. Should we pour out our heartfelt feelings?
I can do that if you like.
Fest. Well, because I think I interviewed you on Mike's for A Dream is a Wish Your Heart.
Oh my God, remember that.
And Circle of Life.
Yeah, Circle of Life, you were there too.
But at that moment, it was like the hierarchy was palpable. You know, you were Raven and I was new. And
not new.
But then eventually, The pilot for my show was supposed to maybe replace you once you decided to...
Yeah.
To end, which never happened. You just kept going.
100 episodes. Sorry about that, Allison. Sorry.
No, please. It has all unfolded as it needed to.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I love you too. Sorry, but I'm going to continue my love.
And
fest.
I love you too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just.
I love you too.
It feels important. Yeah, and you don't even need to say it back. I just felt like it was important.
For those of you guys who are, like, stuck in a cave and don't know this fantastic human, They made all the black people realize that white people do have soul. They got rhythm in their body.
Occasionally.
You did that,
you
girl.
You can dance.
You did that.
You can dance.
As a younger one. And then you just kept going in the industry and kept going and kept advocating for yourself and roles that were amazing and made waves in a lot of people's childhoods. Mm. And that's what we have today.
Like Phineas and Ferb.
There are a couple of titles in there. Yes, new season out now.
How's that been?
Really wonderful in that... And thank you for this fabulous introduction. Hello, everyone. nice to see you and be seen. Phineas is really special in that I started working on it, I think, when I was 12 or 13. And I'm 30 plus things now. And the team is still just as close-knit. And the creators feel like father figures in some ways. While also maintaining professional boundaries, of course.
Yes, always.
But, yeah, I think now, creatively, we can come to the table with so many more life experiences to inform our character choices, whereas before we were, like, still getting our first map of the world, so if they said, you're on a roller coaster, we were like, we have one reference point, because we went on one roller coaster once.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, ooh, how can we turn this into a joke or a moment for a laugh? So, yeah, the new season is out, and... It's I don't know if you've seen it, but it is much higher stakes than it used to be.
I know that the Phineas and Ferb animation trend has gotten to the K-pop world, where a lot of people would do dance steps in the movements. And I'm a fan of K-pop, and they're killing it right now.
Is that, do you think, derivative of Phineas? Is it directly correlated?
They literally say in Phineas and Ferb style, and it's cat's eye. They do like all their choreography.
I didn't even know.
That is cat's eye.
Oh, it's the... Oh,
she's obsessed.
Oh, it's the new group. They do Gnarly and
Do you know
Touch.
The song Gnarly?
No.
Everything's gnarly. Hottie, hottie, like a bag of Takis. I'm the shit. I'm the shit.
She's obsessed.
I'm obsessed.
It's a group.
It's a group that was created through Netflix called Popstar.
Sounds like.
All women from all different countries.
Yep.
Indian, Korean.
Oh.
It's really pretty.
Multi-continental?
Yeah, it was this huge show on Netflix where they were creating a new girl group. So they pulled people from around the world, auditioned them, and then put together this group of people.
Nice.
Named them Cat's Eye. And
the back behind the company behind them is everybody who created BTS and Blackpink.
Wow.
So yeah.
Can I share a quick little side story with BTS? So, well, not directly. Do you know them?
No,
sounds
I love
like you love them. But one of the producers I worked with back when he was still like making beats in his parents' home, ended up creating the song. Is there a song called Butter? Or
yes, yes. Allison.
So shout out to Rob Grimaldi.
You know who made Butter?
Yeah, and I think it was
hot like butter, beat to the other cover.
I think that's the one, right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Sounds like
I
it.
I know it is.
Yeah.
She definitely knows.
And he had that beat, I think, in his catalog for years, of course. And then they're like, you know, everyone's throwing in, trying to see if they can be a part of the project. And he said, okay, fine, like I'll toss this one in as well. And then they loved it. And I think he might have also helped write the top line.
Probably.
So. Wow. Rob Grimaldi, y'all.
Okay, Rob.
But back in the day, we were writing songs called Back to Church, and it was not about church.
Oh.
It was spicy.
Spicy.
Yeah, that's still on YouTube somewhere.
Oh my
we'll
gosh.
Find that for
we'll
you.
We'll dig it up. What kind of music do you like to listen to?
Oh, these days, I have to say, with everything going on in my schedule, I'm mostly listening to like meditative playlists.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually working at the same time, so it's a lot of ambient experimental instrumentals. But one artist I do really like, I hope I pronounce her name correctly, does she go by Maro? M-A-R-O?
Oh, I haven't seen her.
I don't know them. Just there's such a similar to NDRE, when I can hear the quality of breath in the delivery, it's immediately so intimate.
Mm.
And she also has this just like deep, rich, soulful, warm tone.
Love
and
that.
It's so heartful and I tend toward songs that are like kind of solemn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the minor chord person in your life.
I'm not surprised because your discography is jam-packed with not solemn music. Everything from Cheaper by the Dozen to Alice Upside Down to, I mean, you were in Legends of Korra.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love you so much.
Really?
How did you get that job, girl?
I wasn't familiar with Avatar, so I needed to make sure I fit into the cast. And similar with when I did Young Justice and played Batgirl, wow, I forgot we're just name-dropping
as you should. No, this is what you do here.
But I was really amazed by the writers. I didn't realize that like animation for young people can also still talk about social issues, power dynamics, deconstructing identity, you know, because I was hanging out in Phineas and Ferbland, which is more about imagination and friendship. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was so moved by the depth that went into Legend of Korra.
Yeah, that whole brand series is absolutely amazing. Adult Sit. I mean, I watched the live action, the cartoon, Korra, all of them, because, like you said, it touches on just more than what a kid would know. Mm-hmm. It also kind of goes into spirituality and thought process.
Yes,
And all kinds of things that even when I kind of put her on to it, she's like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. Like, it's really good.
So obviously you've done so much, but you've also been really open about turning roles down to prioritize your mental health. And I'm wondering what the learning curve was like there, because it's usually not easy for children to turn
or
child
something.
Actors to
I
turn
should
things
clarify.
Down.
I wasn't out here getting offered things and turning them down. I was begging at the door for work every time. It's more so that as I got older and my health had deteriorated, I was forced to reconsider what I could manage at one, you know, point in time. And then I think it was when I started realizing this might not have been my personal dream had I been given the chance to think about it. Why are you giving me that face? Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
And so when I thought about pivoting in a different direction, which, mind you, if you're a kid actor, you're groomed for one thing. You don't have other life skills. You don't know how the world works outside of the bubble. It was going to be a long time before I felt like I could actually make a shift, but my body just started resisting the process. It was like, why am I going on an audition for a project I do not even want to see made? But I'm out here like, I'm unemployed until I book work. It's just such a, personally, I feel, disempowering position to be in. So I was like, I need to start producing my own stuff, or I need to get out here. Mm-hmm. And I did both.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
What brought you back in?
Well, you never quite leave.
Yeah.
There's always a toe hanging and some kind of rope wrapped around.
Yep.
I'm still on several shows, so fulfilling those contracts. But also now I'm a mental health coordinator, so I can go to productions and say, hey, in addition to participating as talent, what do you think about establishing some of these different practices that can support your crew and your cast? Or looking at things like concern navigation pathways, if and when
What's that mean? What's that?
When something inevitably goes awry on set,
how are you?
Instead of being like, uh-oh, we need to react in crisis mode, you already have a navigation pathway established where people know who they can talk to, what resources are available. It doesn't have to escalate unnecessarily, but it can also still like make sure people are being looked out for. There's just so many ways we could fill in support systems in the industry. So I think that's what's keeping me close enough at the moment. But any chance I get, I run.
So when you took your break, there was like a substantial chunk of time. No. So you were also like going to school and or getting training.
No.
But how did you get? Because aren't you a somatic wellness coach?
Yes, yes.
So you were at one point juggling both.
Well, like, it's actually just a role I'm playing. I didn't get any formal education. Just kidding. 7 certifications deep, I promise.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But unfortunately, thank you, and I have not actually ever taken a break, including during this release of a book. I'm hoping after. I've never taken even, like, a week off since I started working at 6.
You've never?
No. Because even when you weren't working, you were still training. And you still had rehearsals for something else coming up, or you were trying to pitch a project, or, you know, you know.
Oh, I know.
So.
But she's taking breaks.
Like, no. Don't say that. I took one break. I took one break after 6 months on Broadway. I had a mental breakdown, and I took 2 years off, almost, maybe a year and a half off, to go to school. And then I got back in because of The View. And then the next break I took was COVID. So it was a forced break. Yeah. That's the only break I ever had.
That's actually when I started getting the certifications, because everything shut down.
Yeah.
So it was like, if I'm going to make a move, now's the time.
Yeah.
Also, I already had, I think, one certification that allowed me to teach simple stress relief techniques to people. And I did a 14-day series online just because I was seeing people really struggling. Like, what do you do when you're removed from all of your comforts and your daily schedule and the people who you love? And to be with your own body and your own mind alone, for many people, it was obviously very overwhelming. So I led 14 days of classes, just like on Instagram Live and YouTube, and over 100,000 people by the end had shown up. And so that's actually amazing. What signaled to me where I was like, this need
is huge.
And my inclination toward this pathway anyway is the signal. It's time to not try to keep making something happen in entertainment. I have to believe that there's a life beyond this.
That's really hard for people like us who have been in the industry since before we could drive, let alone anything else. You know, I had a similar experience. It's not about me today, but I understand where you're coming from. And I want to also say that very rarely do you find people like us that do find a different
industry to go in, even though you're not fully out, but you did find a different industry to go in that correlates well with ours. Mm-hmm. And my version of that is I went to directing mm-hmm. and producing, because acting, my body rejects it. It
isn't that interesting.
Rejects it. And I stopped music for a while too, because expectations of myself and things of that nature. But when I knew that I was rejecting it, when people would come around on Raven's Home and touch my face, and I'd be like, I need you to stop touching me. They were like, what's the matter? I'm like, I'll do it. Don't touch me. Mm-hmm. I felt like my skin was crawling. It was so uncomfortable. And then the check came and I was like, shut up and do your job. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I find it interesting because we had a lot of parallels in that area, especially with our personal life and our gender. And I kind of want to pivot the conversation a little bit just to talk about queerness and your journey with that. And I'm sorry I misgendered you before, but that's my first question. Are you non-binary in the sense of how would you explain your version of non-binary?
Right. I know I've been thinking about this because there's so much hatred being spewed toward queer people and especially trans people at the moment. And it's so complicated when we all come to the table with so many definitions mm-hmm. for the same term. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge spectrum of how people interpret words. And, like, even the term trans, like, some people assume that also is accompanied by, you know, medical procedures and transitions, mm-hmm. Or that it must mean, if not one, then the other thing, and mm-hmm. it's still the forced binary. And I'm like, wow, I'm so grateful that over the last many years, I've met so many trans people, so many non-binary people who showcase how expansive it is to be human.
Yeah.
And so in my experience, for lack of a better term available, I'm okay with saying non-binary. I wish we had more time with every single person in front of us to be like, okay, let me pause and ask what comes up in your body when I say that, because we probably need to address some of those things before I can even go further in this conversation. But at the end of the day, like, it's about, can we see each other as human beings, mm-hmm. no matter what the label is? And you mentioned spirituality earlier. I think when I started delving into different kind of consciousness studies and different contemplative practices, it opened further doors for me to understand that this, what my first therapist would call earth suit, is, you know, it has its confines, sure, but there's also like an infinite realm of possibility within who we are.
Yeah.
And so experiencing that version of non-binary, it wasn't just like, get my surface face value gender identity correct. It was more like, oh man, I'm trying to find the most liberated state of being while I'm in this earth suit. And it just so happens that once I start deconstructing the ideas of womanhood and manhood and binary and this and that, you're left with so much room to play. And of course, then someone might say, well, I can be all those things and woman. And I'm like, yeah, you can. Amazing.
Yeah.
But for me, when I say that out loud, I'm like, oh, that doesn't quite sit well. So whatever that doesn't quite sit well is the space that I am currently in.
Mm. I love that.
Now, I'm definitely not a man. And that's okay, too. Yeah. And we love men.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll say it. Don't worry about it. I'll say it sometimes.
We were having a conversation yesterday, Raven and I, kind of about these things, these topics, because I feel like people are so complex and there is such vastness, like you were saying, in mm-hmm. all of us. And I feel like there should be room for that. And it doesn't have to be controlled or labeled. I really just feel like people should be allowed to be themselves. And it doesn't matter if one person doesn't understand it and someone else does, because just as much as that person who doesn't understand wants their right to their experience, so does that other individual. And I wish we all just treated each other more from the lens of understanding that we are all human beings. Mm-hmm. And human beings, since the beginning of time, have done things today, like we were talking specifically about prostitution and how, you know, there were sex slaves in the beginning of time. And, mm-hmm. and you think of concubines. And I mean, like, it's literally within our history. Mm-hmm. And it just hasn't changed. We've just forgotten in this generation of time, it seems, what has happened before us or how humans have behaved. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think if we just acknowledge that we're humans and we're just playing out the same cyclical human patterns and behaviors with hopefully more intelligence and hopefully doing it better. But,
barely.
You know, it's just we would maybe be able to give each other more grace, compassion, and understanding.
We were also using the word variety. So, like, mm-hmm. the human species has so many varieties.
Yeah. Of course.
Not just the skin or the hair color, but the mental, mm-hmm. the physical. It's so many varieties. And what happens in today's world and when there is a power structure at hand where you want to control people, yeah. you put a blanket of, no, this is what you're supposed to be, and this is a generality. And so when you suffocate that generality and you keep pushing through, like making these people go through square boxes, the variety is going to pop up strong and heavy eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't really say it out loud, but I'm sure by those who watch and the way that see me, I definitely understand non-binary within myself. And I go towards the American Indian version, which I really, really loved. Which was like, there will be times when there's a feminine energy in me, and then there will be times when there's a masculine energy in me, and then there'll be times when there is absolutely no feminine or masculine energy whatsoever, and it's super neutral. Call that the alien. Good job. And and so, you know, even my mom's not really there. And a lot of people, I won't say it out loud because I do think that it gets a little muddy, like you said. People right. will try to put me in a box, but I'm like, I'm in my own version, and for me to have to explain it every time can be so draining. And so my question to you is, you have gone through some things within your journey as a queer, non-binary person, like conversion therapy and talking to people. What advice do you give you now? Not people ask, you know, younger self, but like, you're a different kind of human. So I'm going to ask you now, as you move forward, what advice do you give yourself as you push through these glass ceilings and brick walls?
Oof. Several things come to mind. One is that transparency and authenticity may have an overlap, but they are also distinct things. And what I mean is, I can be 100% authentic with you right now without having to tell you every single detail transparently.
Period.
And I have to recognize that I've spent my life sharing, it's in a memoir now, like sharing every moment with the general public just for people to consume, for entertainment, not to establish mutually trustworthy reciprocal relationships. Yeah. So I'm now honoring that some things need to be sacred. That's okay. I don't need to kind of like turn myself into the martyr of like, everyone needs to know about what happened because this can be an example for this other issue. Like,
they
no,
love
they're
to put that on us.
Right. Yeah. And so I think recognizing where I need to actually just say, like, for example, this is, I don't know, maybe this is some tea, but an outlet who wants to promote the book, very grateful to hear that they're interested in promoting the book, but they want to be able to take photos in a place that feels like home to me. And forever ago, my first instinct would be like, oh my gosh, I know exactly where to show you. Let me bring you into my most sacred private place that no one has ever seen before, where I feel so comfortable and I can find solitude, and you can blast that to millions of people. Sorry, not now. No more. You cannot come into my home spaces. In fact, we can meet at a public park. We can meet at a dance studio where I used to go all the time if you're looking for threads. But I feel more protective, and I think a healthy way, because we know media.
Like, yeah.
You'll never have the chance to explain yourself in the way that every person deserves to be heard and received and, you know, and that goes for everyone. Like, and then it's going to be dumped into a comment section where people can just blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's one thing. I think another thing is I've held on to this, I think, from the beginning. There's a motto, seek first to understand before expecting to be understood. And while I find that sometimes that's at my own expense, because I'm constantly like, help me know where you're coming from, and I never get to the part where I'm like, hey, I actually have a point of view. Ultimately, if I don't know where you're coming from, I won't know how to tailor my language in a way that can be received with as much care as possible. So I'm finding that, like, yeah, it takes patience and it takes a commitment to empathizing with the person in front of you, no matter how different you are. But if I actually care about being received with love, I have to first understand how you define love, how you define worthiness, what you're going through. It's just, have to build rapport.
You're so much better than me, honey. I don't give a fuck what you think about what comes out of my mouth.
But yeah. I also support that, right?
Sorry.
Like, I think it's important that we're not all the same in how we go about it.
Yeah.
Because also when you think at, like, I forget who to give credit to for this, but the map of social change, the ecosystem of, like, some people are truth tellers, some people are first responders, some people are healers, XYZ.
The variety of humans.
Yeah, like, we need the variety.
Yeah.
So you tell someone how it is, because that's not going to be my strong suit in the same way, but sometimes they need to be met with, this is a hard boundary for a reason. And then I, trained as the facilitator, can be like, hey, when you want to sit with that and it's uncomfortable, that's where I come to life. You know, I'm like, I got you. So,
and I'm somewhere in the middle of you two, because I'm definitely not as abrupt and kind of straightforward as Raven, but I also don't have the patience to sit and really, or even the ability to fully understand. I think that is, I don't even know how to explain my thought process, because there's something that hits in my head in trying to understand this world and people, where I just kind of give up this, like, I don't care, because I'm never going to, and it's not really not caring. What it is the understanding that, or the acceptance of the fact that we will never actually be able to understand someone else's point of view,
right?
Because we are all conditioned and we're all imprinted upon, and we are all people who have had experiences. And again, we were talking about this yesterday. We went and saw a little play, and I was like, the thing that's so interesting is we're all sitting in the same light with the same controlled temperature. We're listening to the same words, and every single person in that room had a different experience.
Right, right.
And that, to me, knowing that fact gives me this feeling of, I can't, like, I don't know. I don't know what to do, because
it's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. And it's like, I can only do the best I can in trying to be understood, be heard, and to receive someone, to try and understand their way of loving or hearing me. And this perfectionist part of my brain that would want to, like, fully be like, no, I fully have to absorb this person in order to fully understand. I would be paralyzed to a certain extent.
This is a little different, but it reminds me of the concept that some people talk about, the window of tolerance, where you're kind of like, okay, this is my threshold. This is what I have the capacity for to, like, play with conceptually and deal with from, like, stimulation of environment and all these things going on. And then, like, if I'm outside that window, I'm just not going to be able to show up as the fullest version of myself. Normal for that to happen. That's life. Like, we're gonna have stressors XYZ, but then, you know, finding ways to, like, either expand your window over time. If you're like, okay, if you said, you know, I'm frustrated by this limitation of not being able to contend with more things at once, then you could be like, all right, my focus is to learn some skills that would build that resilience to be able to do it. 100%. But if you're like, I'm reaching my, like, this is the container and what this earth suit can deal with.
Yeah.
Then, like,
so be it.
Yeah. Then you say, okay, I'm going to serve in my little sphere and we're going to stay right here. And we're going to, I don't know, to mix metaphors, like, tend to the garden here and not try to make the entire jungle the garden you're tending to.
Exactly.
Because I do think, like, being exposed to so much information and so many options for where you can show care or show up, like, it can feel like we're supposed to be experts in every single arena. And, like, that's
not the case.
Also, just being online, people expect you to be like, well, why aren't you posting about da 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 da? And I'm like, well, first of all, that deserves so much intentionality. And I am doing what I can within that realm. But but I can't post every single thing every single day because, y'all, social media isn't my only job. Yeah. I got to go to work. Yeah. I run a mental health company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got to lead a class.
Yeah.
I got to write a book. Like,
yeah.
Also, if you miss one day of news, you're like, people are like, why didn't you post about such and such? I'm like, I don't know, even know who Cat's Eye is.
Right.
There was apparently a whole show. Well,
I heard this statistic yesterday, and this actually helped me understand, because I think that people, when you're talking about these comments, right, I'm like, what is wrong with people? Like, mm-hmm. why can't people think outside of what's on a screen at all? Why are they
It's impossible. The brain doesn't work like that anymore.
Why are people so quick to just react and not have any ability to think, oh, like, maybe she's busy. Maybe she's doing something else. Maybe she's working. Maybe she didn't feel like it that day. It seems that people have lost the ability to do that.
Not at all.
And what I heard was that the average person in our country has a sixth grade education. That is the average person. And the
reading capability.
And sixth grade reading capability, which means that the majority of people you are interacting with online, although they're not 12 years old in age, in brain space and capability, they most likely are. Mm. And that made me understand my comment section a lot better, because I was like, I am literally, no, because sometimes I look at these things, I'm just like, my gosh, like, this show, it's called Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. The amount of times that people still ask what I'm doing sitting here is mind-boggling to me. It's like, I started this podcast, not Raven, me. Like, that's why I'm here. Right. Being told that I should just be the person who, like, puts water in cups. It's like, oof. Wait, people, though, like, it's just, it's so shocking to me that
maybe
this
crystal
is.
Crystal Light? Just plain.
Not water?
Not water, just Crystal Light.
Why Crystal Light?
I don't know, I just thought about it.
That's so weird. You don't even drink Crystal Light.
You're right.
But you get what I'm saying. It's just people, I feel like, don't.
Also, I think to like build on that, I think phones have become a place for us to deposit everything else in our lives that feels like too much.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm dysregulated from a conversation I just had with a relative, and I can go and scroll, and let out my anger there without having to pay the consequence of letting it out with my relative and having to actually repair that relationship,
yeah.
Then I think there's like an offloading and a way to, you know, it's the age old, like, hiding behind the screen. But I think there's something to that for us. We think it's more private than it really is. And it's hard for us to humanize the person on the other side. Like, no, you are... Yeah. You are an entire living human with a psyche, with feelings, with a nervous system.
Barely.
All of us are barely online.
Barely.
We're semi-well adjusted.
I was going to say, semi-well adjusted.
But, like, you know, I think it's hard for people who have not been in this position to really understand, like, and it's all. Like,
it is. Yeah. And then I'm going to be this person because this is who I am. I'm kind of a... Anyway. So...
Angel's advocate, says Karamo?
Yeah, I'm an angel's advocate.
Oh, I just met him, them?
Karamo, him.
They, him.
No, okay. Him.
Him.
Yeah. At that sexy man? Atsuko's, do you know Atsuko, the comedian?
No.
Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Don't no,
tell me the story.
No,
I was like, wait, what? Atsuko says, tell me
more
the story.
About what you said than I'm going
to
say.
No, Atsuko, the comedian.
I forgot to tell you we brought you this.
Thank you.
It's a fidget.
This whole moment was very neurodivergent.
It really was.
But I'm tracking, if you're tracking.
Yeah, we're here.
Atsuko has a new special, Father, now on Hulu.
Ooh.
So good. And that's where I met Karamo. Because I've never seen Queer Eye.
Mm-hmm.
But I live under a rock. And back to top stories, Karamo said what to you about who?
No, Karamo always says that he's an angel's advocate.
Because he doesn't fuck with the devil.
Yeah. But I'm a devil's advocate.
Okay.
So I grew up in Hollywood in the 90s and in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the 80s, too. We're not going to talk about that. And there was a bull in a china shop mental strength.
Okay.
That was kind of like, this is how we do it. You get it done.
Yeah.
If you're not at work on time, you get, you know, docked. If you don't know your lines, you're fired. And inside of an audition, if you didn't do well, the casting person would say, you didn't do well, you got to get out of here. It was very much black and white, cut or dry. Then we get into 2000s, and
it's quieter, but it's the same kind of thing, you know. But I think people were talking about you behind the back and not necessarily to your face. You know, then it started there. Now we're in our generation where we're running things, and I'm finding that we are so aware of mental health that we are sometimes, in my opinion...
No, go for it. I'll meet you there.
Meet me. Because I you see, okay.
Yes.
That in sometimes, in my opinion, we are
accommodating.
Yeah. Overly accommodating, creating these snowflake artists who we've experienced. I can't show up today. I'm having a bad day. Yeah. Well, I didn't wake up well. Well, why didn't you? You had a job to do. But then I'm being the brass talker, would say things and be like, oh my God, Raven, you really have to be aware of what you're saying because you really can hurt their feelings. I said, I didn't
Just your tone.
I didn't call them out their name. My tone was, I've talked to you multiple times already, and now my tone is here. My tone doesn't start off in a stern way.
Sure.
You got me there.
Yeah.
But there is this, like, that my brain is trying to understand.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a balance of being accommodating, but also staying extremely professional and knowing we have millions on the line that you can't just not show up to work.
Sure.
Because, I had a bad day. Like, no. Get up! So help me.
Well, because you had to do that. So you're like, come on now.
Just help me understand how we are creating. And I know we are because we're going to have more balanced people. But help me.
How would mental health coordination still get the job done?
Period.
Yeah. So a few things. One, if we're trying to put everything on the individuals inside a broken system to figure this out, it's not going to work. So a lot of the policies that could be implemented with coordination would be broader systemic shifts to where the entire production is aware of things. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like if you're shooting a scene that has really heavy subject matter and you know that just statistically speaking, someone in the cast and or someone in the crew has probably dealt with this heavy material before in their personal lived experience, you can do something as small as putting on the call sheet a memo, hey, today we're going to be filming scenes that involve blah, 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 blah. There'll be a coordinator on set. If you need to step away for 10 minutes during lunch or whatever, you need to talk, you need resources, just so you know, you're not alone in this.
Okay.
As opposed to, let me interrupt everything that you're doing, hijack the shoot day and say, this person is not feeling well. You have to stop the entire production.
That's what I'm used to. This is what's happening now, right now.
This is because I know who I am, and I'm here to help.
Thank
you. Y'all would just call me.
Yeah, just call her.
Call.
You guys know what we're talking about.
I want to show how this is actually about creating more efficient, successful, healthy sets that also are compelling and entertaining and still produce wonderful entertainment. It's not about trying to like poke at people and say, uh-oh, this mental health coordinator is going to be like, you're going to be dealing with a lot of liability issues.
Yeah.
You don't want the mental health coordinator to go sneak attack. I'm calling all of you out.
Yeah.
No, we're here to actually make the set feel more human, which means yes, we're coming to the table with all of our lived experiences. But again, authenticity and transparency, there's also a difference between like, I'm here on set looking for a guidance counselor versus I'm here on set and there's a lot going on, but I still do have a job. So let me find what options can fit within what we still got to get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that is smart and beautiful because there's been some recent sets that I've been on where, you know, it is, these are kids, you have to treat them like snowflakes. And it's like, okay, treat them like snowflakes. Now let's make the whole day longer. All these adults don't get to go
home
on time.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you tell them, I need you to know your lines, what's going on? Oh, you're talking too harshly to them.
But and this is like, you
like,
need,
what?
But that's where it's like, we need some time in the prep meetings where a coordinator would be able to meet with each kid and say like, let's create tools in the event that you're experiencing blah, 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 blah. Here are 3 to 5 minute things that you can do while the camera is turning around to the other shot to help you regulate, process, express, release, still keep the day moving along. But you know that especially for a child who truly may not know how to, manage what's going on or might truly be overwhelmed.
Because a lot of the times they're green. They have never been on a set before.
Right. So, please, you're just writing my pitch. I'm waiting for the call because these are things that you can do up front.
Yeah.
You have a couple workshops with the kids to say, here's what to expect on a set. Down to things like set terminology. If someone calls, you know,
Allison, we need to talk.
Like, we need to go to Crafty, but the kid's like, I don't know what Crafty is, and am I in trouble? Or, you know,
we need to
help help prep them, give them the tools, also implement these concern navigation pathways, which also, by the way, helps on a given day. If you're like, something is going on and we do need to address this, we can't do it exactly right now because it's going to ruin everything. We have a place where you can scan the QR code, send it to the appropriate person. We will address this so you know that your needs matter and can be heard. And in the moment, what can we do right now to make sure we can collaboratively move forward?
You know what the problem is, though?
I'm signing up.
Yeah, I
right?
mean,
I'm like, no. It's actually, we're making your lives easier.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because then you don't need to be the therapist. You don't need to expect all the adults to be trained in all of these different skill sets. We got you.
Yeah. The thing that I was going to say is the issue with when you're talking about sets, then you're talking about studios, then you're talking about budget. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about people looking at production fees and going, I'm going to scratch that and everyone's just going to have to figure it out. And what people don't understand is the easy. You're giving people ease that they don't even know they haven't had to an extent because it's never existed before.
And we're also saving you money from all of the crisis management that you're calling.
And all of the overtime and all of the things. And you're making better, healthier people. And as you were talking, what I was thinking about was, you know, people say that they want this kind of utopian society. Like, we want to live happily, easily. We want to have healthcare. We want to have paid maternity leave. We want to have clean air and water. But it feels like, I know, so simple. But I feel like there is something in our humanity that also resists those things.
Because it resists ease.
That does. It's like we also want conflict, and we also want drama, and we also want issue, because when things go awry on set and you have that dramatic moment and you have the actor who storms off upset, it does create a friction. It does create an energy that people are talking about and buzzing.
And other people can come in as a savior and be the power
person. Yeah, and then there's structures and dynamics, and then there's repair, and then the repair feels so good for a while, and then you want to, like, fuck it all up again so you can get...
This just sounds like an abusive relationship.
Well, hey, I mean, maybe that's what the entertainment industry is for me. But it's also outside. It goes beyond the entertainment industry. That's the thing, too. So much of what we're talking about, and for listeners and watchers who aren't in this industry, can apply these things into their own workplaces. I mean, toxicity and frustration and people not showing up or doing their jobs or people wanting the easy way out, like, that is literally, you know, you can apply that to anything in life. Sure, this is just relationship and dynamic. But I do feel like there is a lot of acceptance versus resistance. And
people don't want ease. What you're providing is really smart, very needed. And if you ever need help, especially in the world that you know I'm talking about, I'm definitely there, because they look at me very hard. They say that I'm very harsh toned, that I'm old school. And I'm like, yeah, I get shit done.
Right.
You're welcome. But yeah.
But you also speak from a place of being someone who had to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of what you, babe, haven't fully digested is that a lot of what you experienced was also toxic and not correct and doesn't need to be repeated. And I think
those toxic things. I'm really not. I'm not repeating the toxic things that I experienced. What I'm repeating is I was told that this is a job that paid me a certain amount of money, so I need to come on set prepared. Yeah. I need to come on set and know what's going on. And if something's wrong, this is a toxic thing that I do repeat. But if I'm in pain or hungry, I push through.
Sure, yeah.
I understand
that. You have to go to the bathroom.
But there is a difference, because they also brought in a psychiatrist on set and was like, oh, the set is a little weird. And I'm like, I don't trust this person, because I've never seen this person on a set before. You coming on set, who has been a part of it, know how important it is that, I'm sorry, you had something going on at home, but you need to know your lines, because you also signed up for a job. And this is also taking away from others' experience when you come in and you're on your phone the whole entire time. And at the same time, creating those pathways that you're talking about. I know that's not in your pitch, but I'm just saying, like, that's a part of the productivity that I think a lot of people, when they're kids, are afraid to touch because they don't want to harm them in a toxic way.
Yeah, totally. So many things have been brought up, but something that I keep returning to conceptually is that when we overly, and I'm not saying just meeting someone with basic empathy, we need to meet people with empathy. When we overly coddle them in an unhelpful way, we're actually potentially causing their lives and capacities to shrink.
100%.
Life becomes smaller because I can't say yes to this unless it meets all of my perfect criteria. I can't follow through unless this is the most comfortable experience, whatever that may look like for an individual. And so my, you know, one of the opportunities I have as a somatic facilitator is to say, hey, friction, challenge, being outside your comfort zone, just facing unexpected stressors. These are normal parts of life. Mm-hmm. To a degree, they can be in service of growth and transformation. To a degree, not when we're chronically stressed, which many of us are. How can you really not be at the pace with the state of the world? But an opportunity is then to help reframe for young people and adults that when we're coming in to support mental well-being, I'm actually not there to only hold you permanently. I'm actually there to help you learn your own nervous system so you can practice these skills and manage the necessary discomfort to follow through on what you committed to. Now, when working with children, of course, there's a lot here that has to be addressed because developmentally speaking, like, you are working with young humans who aren't just mini adults. They actually have different cognitive structure, architecture, they're still learning to differentiate fantasy from reality, all of these different things where we can't just be like, you're a little me, do what an adult would do and start practicing early. We actually have to shift some of the practices, but then that's where the collaboration comes in between all of the key creatives to be like, what story are you trying to tell? What are the limitations of the production and the budget? Mm-hmm. And then, like, do you know actually how to work with minors in these particular areas? If not, we can be there to help or we can outfit the production with some practices. But I think it's a lot to put on any single adult, especially working with kids, when, like, you often need to provide a certain kind of structure and a certain kind of authority where a young person needs to know that they can count on you to be consistent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
they can count on you to move things from A to B, whereas other adults can help maybe provide some of the flow, some of the, hey, we've got a little wiggle room between now and the next scene. I'm noticing, you know, you put your thumb up as the signal that you were like,
I love a signal.
Yeah. And then, like, we can address that while you can also still keep holding the structure.
You know what we need to address? Major.
Well, we need to address that. I want to work with you.
Yeah,
I
me just too. Want, I need you to work with you too.
Like, personally, I'll send you my like, rates. I want, yeah, please. Thank you, yeah, please. Thank you.
Currently, they're actually free because I have to get 30 hours before I can.
Oh, I'll be your guinea pig.
I'll be 15 hours.
No worries. It's hilarious. Well, you brought up pathways, and my question to you was do you want to walk a new pathway into that teapot?
Oh?
And pull out a topic?
Absolutely.
And you can just.
Way to use flow as a way to bring back structure.
Thank you. Thank you for that acknowledgement.
That was amazing.
I feel really validated.
Okay, so nothing pops out.
No. No. We're not Ellen DeGeneres.
There's a section in the book about that.
Oh. How toxic that is?
I didn't say that. You did.
I said that. I said it loud.
Actually,
read it to us. I know.
It actually plays a in the narrative arc, my experiences, plural, with the Ellen DeGeneres show play a meaningful role in the book. And that's all I'll say.
I love that.
That's an interesting tease that I want to know more about.
There's a lot in this book that I think people, they're like, what happened on Camp Rock? And I'm like, you're coming for Camp Rock, but you're going to stay for a lot of other things. Yeah. Ooh. Okay.
Is
there a snake?
Nope. No. We're nice here. Okay, what are we talking about today on Tea Time?
We're talking about Dreams?
Dreams!
A dream is your wish upon me.
Do you have any recurring dreams?
At nighttime or like life?
At nighttime.
Life dreams?
Sleep dreams. We'll start there and then we can go into life.
Yeah, I'm the person who dreams about... This is very symbolic, of course. I have them less now, but when you're trying to go somewhere and your body can't move, or you feel caged in, or other people seem to be able to fly, but you can't. Thankfully now, those aren't as common. But there was one recurring dream I used to have that took place in some kind of zoo environment where... All of the, oh my gosh, now I'm jogging the memory. All of the displays of, like, what exhibit you're about to go in were actually real animals. Ooh. So it wasn't just a sign about bears. That was a real bear. It wasn't just, like, come see all of the... I think in my dream it was a whole thing of bees. The sign was... It was a bunch of real bees.
Oh.
And so I was then, like, contending with...
tons of
real and
like
wild.
Jumanji.
Yeah, very Jumanji.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, I went downstairs. It became an arcade.
Yes.
Fun house.
Yeah. And then something about Grease Lightning happened there. I might have been in my costume that I wore when I performed Grease at age 3. But what's interesting is I would have this dream every night. And I would pick up somewhere in the zoo and have to, like, you know, run away from animals. And then even when I would wake up and be like, okay, let's shift focus, I would go right back into it.
Do you feel like your dreams were super vivid after you did a lot of somatic work? Or are they more vivid, like, when you're extremely tired? Like, when...
I think when I get too exhausted, I don't remember any dreams.
That's how I am as
and
well.
And maybe that relates to some kind of REM and my body's just like, we have nothing to give. But I will say as I've continued healing and processing, I do feel like my dreams have more of an equanimity to them. They're a little more mundane, which is nice.
Yeah.
But maybe just growing up and everything feeling like the end of the world, it was like, my dreams, oof. Yeah, gee. Yeah. How are your dreams?
Yeah. We have...
Nightmares?
I don't have nightmares, actually. I don't have nightmares. I have very vivid, like, theatrical moments and things about the body. I used to have a dream about a big house on fire with bees, but I knew it was my mom that I had to save. And then I have a lot of dreams about people that are gonna come to me, or that I know that this person is in my dream and they're doing something with me. I might not see that face, but the energy is there. Babe, what about you? What about your dream life?
I have extraordinarily vivid dreams. They are so detailed, and they're so... Some of them are, like, so overwhelming and so intense that I can't even really talk about them because I feel like I don't even know how to begin. Describe. I just want to, like, bring people into my brain and show them. Or I wish I could draw, because if I could then draw them out. I would love to show them. I also have...
Are they lucid? Can you direct your focus?
I can sometimes.
Yeah, no. I can a lot of the time. I don't really have recurring dreams. I do have there is one theme where I lose Raven a lot in my dreams.
You do.
And they will, like, make me panicky, because I will, like, be like, the last one I had, we were at an amusement park and she had this backpack on and we got separated, and then people kept, like, keeping me from her, and I was just, like, trying to get back. And so I'll have that kind of over and over. But I also have premonition-like dreams.
Ooh.
I've had that happen so many times where I'll wake up from a dream, and
the
it was about
that
an earth.
Visioned that actually happened, that plane one?
Oh, my gosh. I've had, yeah.
You're
had
the real?
Plane, I've had, like, plane crash dreams, there's that. I've had earthquake dreams where I'm like, oh, an earthquake, and then an earthquake will hit the morning of the dream that I wake up.
Yeah, a couple days later.
Yeah. People, like, I'll know things about people and then we'll get a phone call, or I'll have, that part is weird. And I haven't really gone deeper into it all the way.
There's night dreams and then there's daydreams. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to blend the topic in with a little bit about your book by telling you a story of myself.
Great. Love to hear it. Tell me more.
When I was, I guess, maybe 11 or 12, I dreamed of writing a book about my life and what I wanted to tell people, because I was so programmed in what I was saying that no one really knew my life and
your truth,
my truth.
Drink.
And my dream is coming true because I'm writing my memoir as well. Wow. Did you dream that you would ever write a book about your life?
First of all, that's beautiful, and I'm so glad, if no other reason, that you can just say I did it and that you finally get it on a page. It is such a process, so take it one day at a time. I envisioned potentially writing some kind of long form project when I turned 65 or 70. It actually felt kind of preposterous to send in a proposal at 30. I think maybe I was 30 when I submitted the official proposal, you know, claiming that I have some kind of wisdom to offer. But then I realized that the genre of memoir has grown far beyond just, you know, someone who's trying to say, hey, now that my life is almost done, here are the 10 things I hope to impart. And also, in some ways, this is me saying, this is the culmination of the first, in the book, it's mostly the first 25 years of my life, and then bringing folks into what I'm doing now. But in a way, that is the end. This is the end of that life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what's ahead. But I go back and forth with the purposes that this book is serving in my personal journey. And, you know, I shared this with a few people. When I was writing, I ended up having to, you'll go through the legal review and they'll be like, can you find 3 to 5 people who can prove that this thing was said or this thing did happen? So heads up, if you write about something, you're going to have to corroborate it.
My people are dead.
Well, some of mine are and some of mine aren't.
Okay.
And so there are different legalities around both of those, I'm learning. And I ended up uncovering information about my life that was completely contrary to what I thought happened in my childhood. Like, wow. Actual different information.
Wow.
And so the book I thought I was going to write turned out to be very different from what the final manuscript looks like, because I had to re-examine things fundamentally and find different takeaways. But you know what I will say? What did happen is it connected dots subconsciously that I wasn't able to figure out how they connected before.
This is so fascinating to me, because I wonder how much of what we believe we know as adults when we're retelling ourselves these stories are factual. And for me, the big thing is actually with my dad, because I have realized that I almost, like on a tape, will tell these stories about my childhood.
Yeah.
This is what my dad did. And I remember, you know, having this moment one day where I was kind of like, I spin him in such a negative light. But am I speaking from a space of being a little girl who had these big, big feelings, who was very afraid in a moment, who didn't understand the reality of a situation, who was also made to feel that small, who was also made to feel that unattractive, that therefore I have taken that experience and said, yeah, my dad called me ugly and my dad called me fat. Well, it's like, no, he didn't actually call you ugly or fat. What he did was made you try his clothes on, and if they fit, then he, and then what was the message you got as a little girl? Oh, I'm a little girl and I'm wearing the same size as a grown man.
And that's not for you, that's for him.
And that's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. My brain wasn't able to process and understand, like, that's inappropriate. When beautiful women were pointed out to me, and I was 11 years old and, you know, prepubescent and all of that, and I was chubby and uncomfortable, and I'm looking at women who are in their 30s and in their bodies and
I'm
like, oh, that's what I have to look like, and therefore an eating disorder starts kickstarting. Like, it's so difficult to, I guess what I'm saying is I've felt some guilt about the stories that I've told and the truth behind them, and I've just had to come to a place of saying that is my experience and I don't have to put it, you know, pen to paper. But
do you feel guilt?
Well, I was going to say a few things you said reminded me that in the writing process, I realized that when you're revisiting a memory, usually you first are holding it in the way that you're most familiar with. So if it's through fear or if it's through guilt or if it's through shame. But I worked with a writing supervisor and she was like, is there more to this story? Because, you know, how'd you get from here to here? And suddenly, for example, you're developing eating disorder behaviors, but over here you're only praising these people as being perfect and mm-hmm. every situation as being like nothing bad ever happened. Like, so what was the catalyst? How'd you get from here to here? What else is unsaid? And I would go back and have to kind of hold each memory with different orientations of being. Like, okay, if I went back and I held this memory with compassion, what would that look like? You know, like kind of begrudgingly sometimes. Yeah. And if I went back and I held this with an adult awareness as opposed to my younger self only seeing what I can see. And that did spark some revelation around like, okay, some of this feels maybe objective. These things did happen. Some of this feels subjective. And now I have to make the decision about what story I want to tell and believe.
Yeah.
You have to make a lot of decisions, whether you're writing a book or not. Like, you got to, and I'm not saying to deny what actually legitimately happened as much as all of the white space around that. Yeah. Like on the page, if the ink represents what objectively happened, but you've still got white space and the margins, and that's being filled in as an actor would with the character, like, what are all these other ideas and beliefs and, in you know, isms that this person has? Like, there's a lot of wiggle room to shift your perspective, or at least to learn how to play with shifting your perspective. Mm-hmm. You might end up being like, no, I stand by what I thought this whole time. But at least taking, I guess, accountability for that and knowing, like, this part is my subjective claim about what happened.
Yeah. While you were writing the story, I mean, I remember us talking a little bit when we were at an event and you were like, really make sure you lean on your partner because you go through a lot of, for lack of a better term, PTSD moments. Did you have any bad dreams while writing this?
Yes, so many. The insomnia and I don't deal with a ton of panic attacks, but there have been two seasons of my life where that showed up in response to something happening. This is one of them. And you know, I don't want to sit here and like only point to the challenges, but this book was really hard. Mm-hmm. It was really hard. And we've been through some shit. So I didn't think that this thing was going to be the thing that really undid me. But I did end up reaching out to the therapist I work with and just saying, like, I think I'm going to need more support. At this point, you know, we were only seeing each other once a month. And that felt like steady. And I'm also a practitioner, so it's good to have a therapeutic alliance and, you know, whatever. A lot of different logistics there. But I was like, I think I need to see you more often. And even if it feels like I have nothing to say, I just need to know that I'm going to have a place and a space that's reliable to be, and to maybe create some distance from what is so immersive right now. So I don't know what that process is going to look like for you. And again, I wasn't trying to coddle myself, but I was like, I felt like I'm not going to be able to make it to the finish line if I don't create some like strategic moments to replenish. But honestly, like, I was sitting at the computer for 14 hours a day, like typing a word, backspacing, typing a word, backspacing, racking my brain on things that I thought I knew a lot about already.
I think the fact that you also were writing your own book in that way, because Raven has the support of a ghostwriter, which is really wonderful. I think that the fact that you were doing that, and I can speak from my own experience as somebody who writes, that is it doesn't matter what you're even writing about. It's the process of getting started. It's so draining. And yeah. I have literally written a sentence and then deleted it, and then just gotten up. Because I'm just like, what the fuck? This is just too much. Like, I don't even understand how to get myself started. So,
you guys, it's called AI. Catch on.
Yeah.
No, I wish.
Here's my book written by ChatGPT. No.
Yeah. I had kind of premonition or whatever energetic things transpire beyond physical form. When I was writing chapters about specific people, people I hadn't heard from in 20 plus years, they would reach out.
Hell yeah, they would.
They would, and I'm not saying this happened once or twice. I'm talking about like 15 different people.
You're in alignment.
As I was writing about the very thing. Because I also have to check in with them. I had to make decisions about, like, should I tell them up front that they're going to be in this book? Should I make sure I just, like, channel what needs to come out and then hit them up? Some of these people I don't even know how to get in contact with anymore. But one example was I went to treatment for eating disorders. And there was a particular therapist whose name I changed in the book. So I'm going to try not to accidentally say his name out loud. If I do, please cut it out. Mm-hmm. And hadn't heard from him since I was in treatment, of course, you know, but we had exchanged information whenever it was legally okay to do so, in whatever capacity was legally okay to do so. Mm-hmm. He's wonderful. He follows all the protocol. And randomly, he reached out and just said, like, hey, I wanted to check in, see how things have been unfolding. And I said, I kid you not, I'm writing about the lesson you taught in treatment that shifted the way I approached my relationship to food, to body, to work. Wow. And
that's so cool.
That's so cool. And it reminds me of kind of bringing it back to the topic, flow state, which is also kind of a dream state, that twilight time in whether your eyes are open, whether you're working, whether you're sleeping, whether it's 3 o'clock in the morning or the witching hour, that when you are in alignment, when you are doing the thing you're supposed to be doing, and you are quote unquote channeling these stories from people, they will show up.
They feel you.
She has the same story about me when we were not together, that she would think about me and I would call her the next day. Or I had the same situation with many people in my life. Or, like I said, I would see somebody in my dream, wake up thinking about them, and then I get a text. There is a current of flow of energy to everyone that you've had in your life, whether you ghost them, whether you broke up, you know, toxically, whether you didn't, that is always there when you make a connection. Like, we will always have a connection. We've never had any type of personal relationship, but being that we've been in our aura and we have such a similar situation, our paths will cross for the rest of our lives. And it's beautiful, because if you see those moments, those dream states, those flow states as a positive, it will continue to keep you on the right path of what you're doing. And I'm not trying to preach to you, but I'm just saying, like, with your book coming out, the work that you're doing with your mental health work, your personal journey is, and I'm not, I say this very kindly, I'm not writing my book for y'all. I'm writing my book for me to get this shit out.
Yeah.
But I know it's going to help people later.
Sure.
And it's going to help so many people, because you are coming from such a flow state, such a space of...
Well, it's pure. It feels pure and authentic. And I think anytime anyone is able to do that, it will resonate with someone else. There is like a frequency and a vibration that is attached to truth. And that is why truth is our most... kind of valuable thing in a way, you know, or most impactful.
I would say love, babes, because truth can change.
Yeah, but truth has a different, I don't know, Cliff and I talk about it all the time.
Sorry,
I won't
shit on your experience.
No, you're not shitting on my experience at all. I want to know if you have dreams for the future.
Ooh, so.
Life dreams, not night dreams.
Yes. I'm nervous to say this, to admit this.
Okay.
For everyone to know. But I have absolutely no idea.
Perfect.
And I've never not known.
Good for you.
But I think that I need a period of time to experience life and allow myself to understand what's going on, where I might plug in, what I need to know. Do I need to skill up? Let's take inventory of the relationships in the life. I just need time.
Yeah.
If I can find it and if I create it, I suppose. But I imagine the next, like, 3 to 5 years, I want to be, you know, getting my feet wet as a mental health coordinator, and see also what I can do to support federal legislation and policy changing for what? Oh, for a lot of things. But for mostly things related to child protections. And
if you need me, I'm here.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have several bills. One of them has moved forward. The other, well, I can't say this on record, but we have to reconfigure some things because of things going on in the larger
world. Yeah.
But it's really powerful. And these would be federal protections, so you don't have to just convince every state individually. I know when we both worked on Demi's doc, they talked about different protections for kids in, like, digital spaces, social media spaces. Yeah. So this would build on that.
Yummy.
And so I want to do what I can, but I also want to leave room to be surprised and to be more than just a person who's working in this industry.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else. What do you think I should do? Can we throw out some ideas?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, offline.
Okay.
Let's do it offline because I have a lot of ideas. Babes, what are your dreams for the future?
Because I have I don't know. I'm just like, oh, this is why. She just wanted to rush that to get to her because I want to give Allison ideas.
Yeah, offline.
My dreams for the future, why don't you just go, babe?
I really would love to see you, Allison. Just do Mike's Super Short Show for me, please. Please! Please! Well, my child in me really wants it.
You have to do it.
Obviously, I'm Mike.
I don't even know what it is.
It's okay, sit back.
It's an okay sign and a point, which, by the way, this in other countries means you.
Cool.
So
let's
I think, banned from those countries.
Okay, I'm going to learn something.
So You are Mike, so you have to say, and now you know, because it's, and then we'll all say, Mike's Super Short Show with Mike's the okay sign and a point.
To what?
Mike's Super Short Show.
And just down?
What's my line again?
Your line is, you know your line.
No, just give it to me one more time.
And now you know, because
got it. Got it. I'm ready.
But where are we looking? What camera?
The middle.
Okay. All right, let me get my Joey, Andy, and Matt Lawrence bangs.
Wait, but I want to understand. So when we do Mike's Super Short Show, are we just pointing exactly?
We point to the camera.
Oh, got it. But then our okay is like this?
Yes, but maybe don't put that right in front of your mouth, just in
right,
case.
Right, right, right.
And now you know, because it's Mike's Super Short Show.
No one has asked me to do that.
Can I tell you guys right now the joy?
So much.
Let me, this is like for you if you ask me to have a vision. This is like for real.
Yeah.
This is like if I ever meet a charmed witch, it's going down type shit. Like that brought me so much. I'm done.
Oh my gosh. So aggressive.
R.I.P. to the hearing of the audio engineer.
For real.
I'm so happy. Did you get that? Can I get it on my phone, please?
I am so sorry about the decibel level.
Oh, we're used to it on this show. Let's toast.
Let's toast. Also, can we just check out the fact that there are two places to put your head through in this shirt?
That's confusing.
And it took me a while to figure out which one.
I think you made a good choice.
Yeah, I think you chose correct.
Yay.
Let's toast.
Cheers.
Cheers. Today on Tea Time, we are toasting to psychedelic research.
Okay, psychedelic research.
All right, like MAPS?
Yeah. Tech, what?
What?
That's one of the institutes that deliver some of the
MAPS
training and certification in this arena.
Oh, I was like, oh, like an atlas?
MAPS? Nope. Okay, keep on.
Right. Texas has approved $50 million in state funding for drug development trials for Ibogaine.
Okay, Ibogaine.
A powerful, naturally occurring medicine showing extraordinary promise as a breakthrough treatment for substance use disorder, trauma-related conditions, and traumatic brain injury.
Yes.
Texas now leads the world in psychedelic research investment. So cheers to Texas.
Whoa.
Texas. Who'd have thought, right?
Who'd have thought?
I'm really proud of Texas. You're catching up. Listen, a little micro dose here, a little puff there, a little gummy on the side, and your dreams come alive. Listen, I'm down
and
for
in
you.
Therapeutic containers
there
in service of healing.
100%.
For sure that for that.
That part.
Watched after by a practitioner.
But doesn't they need to be it. Formal therapy all the time. We don't need to industrialize this. We don't have to talk about the mental health industrial complex. Anyways, lots of asterisks, but you get the picture.
Most definitely.
Yes.
Well said. Have you struggled or enjoyed that world? The drug world? Is that in your book? I'll cut it out if necessary. I don't know how to ask.
Did
you do drugs, Allison? Do you still do drugs, Allison?
You know what?
You didn't know my last name,
right? Did you go to rehab for drugs, Allison, as well as eating disorder?
I do know your last name. My brother's name was Blaze, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Choice. No, no.
Oh, no. Okay, no, no. No.
Never.
Never.
It's a little heartfelt, which is, it's a little tender, which I grew up in a household with people who were, yeah, dealing with addiction. Okay. So I myself didn't choose to partake, but it didn't mean I didn't have other addictions like fitness and food and overachievement and whatever. I actually think in some ways that was more sinister because I tried to hide it under things that were like socially praiseworthy. Mm-hmm. We unpack that in the book. but I have done some psychedelic-assisted therapy.
Sick.
And that was really powerful in the way that it helps dissolve some of the key ways that your brain tends to, you know, go to the familiar story. It gives you space to see things afresh and to experience things anew and in a container with someone who can support that kind of transformation. So I am in full support. Also, there's... I mean, the way that we classify drugs and the reasons that we do that and how it's connected to so many other social issues and da 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 da.
Really bad.
There's some room for us to open our minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Please.
Definitely. All puns intended.
All puns intended.
Allison. All roads lead to drugs.
All roads lead to drugs.
All roads lead to your book, which is coming out.
Semi-Well Adjusted, August 12th. I like that it's a Leo baby, just like me.
Me too.
Thank you so much, Allison, for blessing us with your human, what do you call it, earth suit?
Yeah.
And spiritual being here on Tea Time.
This has been wonderful.
Absolutely. Thanks for having amazing. Me.
Thanks for,
Where can know. We find you on all your socials?
Yes, yes. Well, until I run away, you can find me at Allison Stoner, A-L-Y-S-O-N, and you know how to spell stoner.
You're killing it on the TikTok. Does. Your TikToks, I love them.
Thank you.
They're really funny.
Yeah. They take a lot of time, so thank you for watching.
No, they're really good.
And everyone, it's all in service of selling books. Please. Yes.
Buy the book.
I know that
The
feels...
sooner you pre-order,
yeah,
the fewer dance trends I have to do. No, you probably want the dance trends. The fewer other trends I have to do. I'll give you the dance trends if you pre-order.
I have a dance trend for us to do later. Thank you guys so much for watching Tea Time again.
You've seen them dance, right? They're, like, very good.
Have you seen me dance? Calm down.
Yeah, wait.
I'm amazing.
Have we danced before?
No. You got this. It's going to be fantastic. Okay. Have you seen her dance before?
I'm not dancing with you two.
You're a millennium alum.
Oh.
Is this true?
I didn't even get to finish the story, which was, it was heavily traumatic. And I was pushed into the middle of the circle to do the thing, and I just stood there, and I was just frozen.
That's so nerve-wracking. I'm sorry that happened.
It's okay.
To you.
It's, you know.
We can do some somatic facilitation.
Let's do that.
It's much more gentle.
It built strength.
And you're empowered to make the decisions that work well for you in that moment.
I love you. Thank you.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to give it a thumbs up. If you didn't like it, give it a thumbs up. And don't forget to press that bell for notifications.
And please subscribe.
Also, if you're going to, just quick note, if you're going to keep consuming things that they're producing, but you're not just ticking a box, come on, they're putting in a lot of time and energy and effort to bring you material to help you while you're just scrolling on the toilet and in between important meetings. So you should definitely hit subscribe. Do I get a cup?
And then buy their book.
Yeah.
The end.
That's right.
I think it just did my job.
That's the homework.
Good job. Bye, everybody.
Bye.